Thank you all for being here in this session, and I'll be talking about strategies influencing spatial heterogeneity of microbial life in ELISA-meter. So a couple of terms that I want to point out, strategies, spatial heterogeneity, microbial life, and ELISA-meter. And just to give a brief background of why we are studying ELISA-meter, so all of this work was carried out and is being carried out at Biosphere 2 in the Landscape Evolution Observatory. Some of you may have visited it already. If not, and you're in town, just try and go there if you can. So a little bit of background about the project, and these are all my collaborators and my PIs and my grad and the grad students that I work along with, and I love the team that I work with. So why ELISA-meter? So if we take a step back from that question, you know, the processes that we study in biogeochemical cycles, what we capture is on a centimeter to a meter scale, right? But these processes are influenced by functions and correlations that happen both at a finer and a coarser scale. So at a finer scale, these associations, you know, you have microbes and they secrete products, and you have plant exudates, and these kind of happen at the nanometer, micrometer scale. And on the other spectrum of the coarser scale is what we say the entire development of an ecosystem that happens over kilometers and even megameter scale, right? When we take a step forward from that, what a lot of us are trying to achieve is kind of go into the realm of modeling and help us predict these responses more accurately, right? And what we are struggling with right now, especially when it comes to microbes, is we don't really have a indicator or something that feeds into a global model, because really the processes are happening here. We are capturing the effects at this scale, and then we are trying to feed in these models, and there's a certain disconnect that's going on. So then the next question is, what if we have a system that can allow us to control a lot of these variabilities that occur, and in turn make us, you know, it kind of helps us come up with some predictability and some parameters that can go into these climate models. And that is the sort of the religious philosophy behind Landscape Evolution Observatory. And this is a graphic of one of the hill slopes, which basically ties into the idea that, let's say you have a controlled environment and you fill it with something very primitive. So we start with a very simple system. So in our case, it's unweathered basalt rock. It's basically ground basalt. And we kind of control the temperature, we control precipitation, and we control the environment to a certain extent. And can we track, you know, the gas exchanges that happen? Can we track the microbial life as water flows down these hill slopes? Can we track the aggregates or the heteroaggregates that are developing? And with that, these are the three hill slopes of the Landscape Evolution Observatory. And what the hill slopes look like are basically slopes like this. And these slopes have around 500 sensors embedded in them, inside them. So you have soil temperature, water potential, soil solution samplers that are all embedded in the slope. And you can't step foot on the slope. And this is what I love about this is the exciting part as well. So we have these gantries from where we basically suspend ourselves and we sample. The trick part is, because these are huge hill slopes and we want to maintain the structure of the hill slope, we can't really do intensive sampling on these hill slopes. So for that, we have something called the mini-LEO. And this is the experiments that we did on mini-LEO is what the results I'm going to present today. But I thought I'll give you a background about LEO, because that kind of puts into perspective of why we are studying ELISA-meter at this size. So the way the mini-LEO is designed is also pretty similar to how the hill slopes are. It's a scaled-down version. It's a meter deep. And we have these sensors and samplers that are, again, embedded in the soil material. And we have these irrigation vessels, if you can see here. We have these irrigation ports that bring in water. This end, which is the toe slope, is what we call it. It's filled with gravel. And then there's a perforated sheet kind of a thing to hold the system in place, right, so nothing falls off. And these are a bunch of sampling tubes that you can see on the ground here, and then a lot of sensor ports that are connected to the real-time data loggers that we have inside. So the way that we did this experiment was basically divide mini-LEO into these sections. So on a Euclidean XYZ space, we divided mini-LEO into these, what we call as voxels. And with each voxel size of 20 centimeter by 10 centimeter by 10 centimeter, so 200 centimeter cube. And we basically hypothesized that the stratification of environmental conditions brought about by flow path, brought about by various redox conditions, varying water potential, that is going to give rise to a microbial life that is heterogeneous, and that we'll be able to capture this heterogeneity in the scale that we are functioning right now. The way that we sampled was, so from each voxel, so this is one voxel, this is the next one, so on. So from each voxel, we actually collected samples for microbial analysis. We collected samples for bulk density, horizontal conductivity, and vertical saturated conductivity. And the rest of whatever was left was used for geochemical analysis. And I just want to point out my PIs here, Peter Troke, John Cherover, and then my fellow, the grad students that I worked with, Antonio and Yari, who we did a massive excavation of this whole lysimeter for over a period of 14 days. And this is how one voxel looks like. So in red is you have the microbial core. This is the bulk density core. Then you have your horizontal KSAT and your vertical KSAT. And the leftover was all geochem samples. And so we extracted a total of, well, we collected a total of 324 samples, and we just decided to work with a subset of those samples. This was a first attempt, so to speak, to work with microbial samples in this kind of a soil material. So we stuck to half of our samples, and I did a 16S ITAG amplification on those 162 samples. We also collected intensive data on the edaphic factors, so pH, carbon, inorganic, organic, total nitrogen, electrical conductivity, bulk density, saturated conductivity, and then the elemental composition. I would like to bring up, because our session is an oligotrophic environment, so really the range that we are functioning, so when I tried working with these soils, and here you see these three plates on the right are from the mini-Leo soil that was wetted, and this one is from the parent material. So straight away, you can see there are very few, you know, colonies that are present in the parent material. And even on these plates, it was in the range of 10 to the 7 CFU per mil. So straight away, a challenge that we are dealing with is studying samples that have low carbon and low DNA. And so I worked with the Mayer lab, University of Arizona, and Julie is from that lab. And they have a very good system of working with these sort of samples. And it's surprising because this was our higher limit of DNA that we could extract, which is actually the lower limit that most sequencing centers will ask you for. So I think as we move ahead, we need to address these issues as well. And you can see that, so just to give a brief overview of how the soil material looks like, we ground it up, this is how it looks. And here you have the ranges of some of the parameters like carbon, nitrogen. And you see this, the mini-Leo samples, this gives us an idea of what those ranges are after about 5,000 millimeter of rain over an 18-month period. So obviously there is difference that's going on between what the parent material was and what we have in the mini-Leo after 18 months. So moving on to the ITAG analysis, so the way we did this work is, I'm failing at this. Anyhow, so we collected samples from two regions of mini-Leo, and we called them X2 and X3. And we sort of, because there were 162 samples, the question was whether we really need to analyze all of them. And we, by making this comparison of sample sets that came from one region versus the next one, we found there wasn't any significant difference in the community composition. And the hydrologist also found that there wasn't any lateral flow that was going on within the lysimeter. So we just decided to stick to one set of samples from the mini-Leo. And that's the results that I'm going to be presenting now. So if you look at a weighted UNIFRAC diversity metric, a distance measure, these samples are from the surface, and they're pretty clearly delineated from the rest of the samples. And when I say surface, if you look at the surface and then the next layer, which is depth 10, then the next, which is 20 centimeters below the surface, then depth 30, which is 30 centimeters below the surface. And you kind of see we are sort of moving over where the samples at the lower depths of the lysimeter all sort of clump together at the same point. We also looked at beta diversity, the same plot if you visualize it by length. So all the samples on the surface, no matter where they came from, were all clustered together. So for the most part. Again, all the samples, let's say from the last layer, wherever they came from this plane of the hill slope, did not really matter. It just mattered that they were all in that particular depth. So we were getting to this point where it was, you know, that this was suggesting that depth probably is the most significant factor that's affecting how the heterogeneity of the microbes play out in the lyse emitter. So if you did a canonical correspondence and you see some of these variables, again, these are all the surface samples, and these are all the rest of the samples, which I have, it's not clearly visible, but we are trying to fix that. But yes, so, but this doesn't really tell you which variables are significant. This just tells you the directions at which the communities are driven with respect to the variables, right? So we did a multivariate analysis and Adonis on the continuous variables and Anosim on the discrete ones. And the ones that you see marked in red show a highly significant effect on our community. And again, surprisingly, pH was not one of them. Also, having said that, we are looking at a lyse emitter of this size, so you have to keep that in mind as well. So some of the variables, what I was interested in was, again, depth. And the next question was, the effects that we see in these variables, is that dependent on depth, right? So the next question was to correlate depth with these variables. And when we did that, what we saw was depth was explaining the variability that we see for all the one, the variables that are marked in red, and length was sort of correlating with pH values over the entire lyse emitter. But again, the depth was probably the most significant factor that was affecting how the heterogeneous our community was. And when I tried to, okay, we know which factors are significant. What if you want to find out which OTUs or which phyla go with the, you know, are correlated with those factors? And there's a very polluted table, but if you just look into two parameters, and there's total nitrogen and total inorganic carbon, we do see a lot of strong and positive and negative correlations with certain phyla. The blue color signifies a negative correlation. The red color signifies a positive correlation. And if you have three stars, that's most significant at level of 0.001. And if you have one star, then that's significant at level of 0.05. So straight away, some phyla were clearly visible to us when we carried out this study. And then the next question that we asked was, okay, can we see if any of these phyla are specific to any of the depths that we are studying? Is any depth specifically linking or showing us that some phyla prefer depth A versus depth B? And the next thing that we did to study that was do a LFC analysis. What this graph basically shows you, and you sort of have to just look at a couple of things. So the dark colors that you see here are correlated with the depths. So if you look at Bacteroidetes, they told us that, all right, at depth 20, Bacteroidetes were the most differentially abundant phyla that was present. At surface, Actinobacteria was the most differentially abundant phyla. And we go around the circle and kind of staring at the data, what stands out quite a bit is the Cyanobacteria, which is significantly present in depth 40. And that's kind of counterintuitive because Cyanobacteria is a phototroph, right? And what is it doing at depth 40? And this led us to think about the fact that maybe Cyanobacteria is tracking water, and a paper in Nature came out in 2012, I think, that talks about Cyanobacteria tracking water rather than sunlight in desert crust. So this was quite a bit of interesting find, which kind of led us to the next process of correlating flow paths with the community that we see. So this is something that I'm working on right now. The idea is you have this hill slope, right, and you rain on it, and these figures are from a certain period that we rained on it. You have rain, you have water seeping down, and it drains out from the bottom. But the maximum amount of time that water spends is sort of in the central region of the lyse emitter. So this is the most water-dense region, I would say. So is it possible that cyanobacteria track this water and they are on the surface, but they go down and then they come up again? And that is quite a possibility, because there has been research that shows this group of bacteria capable of such functions. So that's something that I'm working on right now. And then the next connection to that is, what happens to the functionalities? So the organism that we know is a phototroph and fixes carbon and is crucial for a system like ours, which is highly, highly oligotrophic. What is the significance or relevance of these microbes? And what happens as the soil evolves and we move over time? And do we then just see cyanobacteria only on the surface when it's a more developed system? Having said that, just to conclude, obviously oligotrophic conditions harbor life, but we have to aim at detecting the lower levels of those of that community. And we are sort of it is challenging. Also, this intense sampling scheme that we came up with was good for us, because we may have missed a lot of these patterns that we do see now if we hadn't, you know, sampled at this level. And then the incipient soil conditions are suitable for studying trajectory of microbial life. So we know soil microbes highly diverse, and we are sort of grappling with that. Why not start with also simple systems and try to kind of find out or elucidate those functions and processes, and then tie into the complex systems that we are heavily researching anyhow. Also, microbes employ dynamic strategies to thrive in harsh conditions. And as Julie mentioned, we don't really have a full grasp of what is going on. And we can actually track those functional patterns in a system like, you know, LEO or mini LEO, and see what happens to the processes as the soils evolve over time. With that, I would like to thank the funding source, National Science Foundation, also all the staff and members at Landscape Evolution Observatory. It's a huge project, and it takes a lot of us to kind of work through it together. And Dr. Mayer in University of Arizona, Julie, Peter Troop, John Chirover, Antonio, and Yadi. And with that, I'll take questions if you have any.